I'll be here today talking about something quite serious to me. And I've titled it, The Limits We Refuse to Face. Now, this is not a political conversation, not intended to be. This is more about the physics, the energy, the ecology, and kind of the end of the industrial era. I know that's a quite big subject, but I can talk about it for an hour. And what I would really appreciate is having folks call in on this subject, because it's so heavy and we come from so many different perspectives. I'd like to invite more of a conversation. So let me start out by giving the station call-in number, which is 707-755-9250. If you just got your pen out, it's 707-755-9250. So let me ask you, have you ever stood at a gas pump and watching those numbers rotate climbing up and felt something deeper? Or have you walked into a grocery store with a lot of empty shelves during a shortage and felt that modern life suddenly look fragile? At least less than resilient. Well, yes, it's an inconvenience, but it's not only an inconvenience. It's really the fragility, the lack of resilience that is at display here with our current way of life. And more people are sensing it now. The systems surrounding us feel less stable than they once did. Would you agree with that idea? I mean, look at housing. The cost of housing is such a big share of most people's budgets. And insurance, we're facing instability because of nature and the wildfires and that are exacerbated by climate change, but also the insurance for future damage that industry is starting to see. And of course, we're seeing what's happening to energy in the Hormuz Strait. And we think that that's really the only problem with energy. Yes, it's a political problem. Yes, there's a war. Those things aren't helping, except maybe to point us to the idea and realization that the oil age is coming to an end. The fossil fuel driven world is coming to an end. And we're seeing it in our food systems, which were so magnificently industrial, feeding the world with such pride we had, but at what costs? At soil depletion? What about the water scarcity we have? We like our idea of having lots of water and using lots of water, and it's quite a privilege. But we also are watching the global supply chains and economic anxiety about trade. And not only this climate instability causing lots of what we call natural disasters, but they're an outcome of something that got started quite a while ago. And then we've got political fragmentation. This is that we have found out the limits of what we call democracy, or at least our way of doing it. And we're coming up against harder issues, but the political system is really not prepared to deal with something at that level. We like to discuss a lot of these things as separate crises. I tend to do that because that's where people are seeing some understanding of why this is happening. But as we dig deeper and deeper and deeper on the root issues of what causes these crises that we're experiencing, we realize they're really not separate. They really can't be fixed. you know, one at a time with solution A, solution B, solution C. We're very oriented as a civilization to, you hear of a problem, we have a fix for that. We have an app for that. We have a technology for that. We have an answer for that. Well, there's a level that we don't have answers for. And these things aren't separate. And so this is at the level we tend to not want to go in our thinking. And that's what I say, not wanting to face. And one way to put all of these symptoms in one word, it's often called overshoot. Overshoot means that nature can repair itself up to a point. You do enough damage fast enough and severe enough, it can no longer come back. Plants are pretty resilient. Wildlife is pretty resilient. They adapt really well, as we do we humans. You know, but there comes a point of where you're so destroying the biological underpinnings of all life, including our life, that our technology, our AI, our ingenuity as humans, and our all this progress we've made, we've come to a point that many scientists now agree are all the symptoms of overshoot. So overshoot is the focal point. It's one focal point. There are a lot of focal points, but climate change is not the problem. It is a problem for industrial civilization. But overshoot is the problem that industrial civilization is causing. So if we want to stop being an overshoot and driving us to extinction, then, you know, we've better be able to talk about this. Back in 1972, I had just been out of college a little while, and there was an MIT research project. It was called for by the Council of Rome or something like that, on the limits of growth for the MIT researchers to kind of map the global system dynamics that what they called the World 3 computer model they had, which is not as sophisticated as today's models, but what it could tell us about the limits to growth, about how we were consuming our assets, not just living on the interest. So that was an eye-opener for people that dared to face it. One of them I had on this show in an early episode, and his name is Richard Heinberg, and he quoted that this research project in 1972 opened his eyes, got him talking about the subject, and clearly with the Post Carbon Institute that is headquartered here in Santa Rosa, and he's a senior fellow. He continues to be a world expert on the limits to energy. And it's the limits to energy and all the resources that we look to for making this industrial world that we've created continue. But can it continue? Does exponential growth on a finite planet predict eventual systems overshoot, decline, and collapse? Well, people avoid that word collapse. They're finding less trouble saying the word overshoot. But overshoot, if you graph whatever that process is that is overused, it's on an incline. And it's exponentially going up. And at some point, it has to crash down because it's gone beyond what can support its meteoronic. Oh, boy, I should watch these words. It's exponential growth. So I think that the most unsettling thing is that today's world is showing the patterns, the exact patterns that MIT model, that MIT research expected and described. Those patterns are the same. We have a major misconception that somehow collapse belongs to the future. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. I'm not going to worry about it. And when I talk about collapse, I mean total biological collapse. It doesn't. It doesn't just happen now or in the future, but it's been part of our human history. It has really defined phases of our human history that we can study. It has a history, has this long record of collapsed civilizations, fallen empires, ruined ecosystems, and exhausted resource bases. This is not new. It's not an anomaly. It's a recurring property of unsustainable systems that overshoot their resources. Let me take a moment to thank our underwriters. And before I do that, I want to remind you, I'd love to have some caller on 707-755-9250. Either challenge me on what I'm saying or give me your version of what's happening. I'm really ready to converse as long as we're dealing with it in a serious matter. I've done shows on comedy, and this is not one of them.
Cows is underwritten in part by Minnie Rivers Books and Tea. Minnie Rivers specializes in tools for spiritual practice, tea, and teaware. They are located at 130 South Main Street, Suite 101 in Sebastopol, and they can be found online at minnierriversbooks.com. They can also be reached by phone at 707-829-8871.
Cows thanks North Coast Solar for their ongoing support. They've been supplying residential and commercial businesses with solar power since 1984. Their website, ncsr.com, contains information how to improve energy reliability. They can be reached at 707-575-3999. North Coast Solar is a proud to sponsor Uncle Charlie's Jukebox here on Cows every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific.
So this is Bernie Steffen, back to Ecologic with today's agenda, which is not about politics. I want us to go deeper, much deeper than our political system allows or deals with. I want to talk at that ecological level, at the physical level, at the physics of what happens with energy and land and water and the biology that supports all life on this planet and the energy that keeps it all going. So we're talking about are there hard physical limits that industrial civilization flatly refuses to face? Well, MIT told us quite a long time ago, and it hasn't been refuted, that yes, we are exceeding those limits. That is a fact. That is not something you have to believe, but you do so at your own peril by not believing that. Our industrial civilization has been on the wrong track of overusing what it needs to give us the life that we have. And therefore, it flatly refuses to face the reality that that cannot continue. That must decline, and more likely, that will collapse. But do we want to talk about collapse? No. Modern life feels so normal, but only because we were born into it. The historic context shows a much different reality. For 99% of our known history, humans lived locally, within watersheds, within ecological limits, using low energy flows tied to the seasons and what the ecosystem provided for it. Then came a great disruption. When fossil fuels were first discovered, with how amazing the coal was to launch the industrial age, and the oil, all of the things that could be done with that oil, and then the gas. So we changed everything. We were able to create what I call a superhuman capacity overnight that we now think is normal. But that great disruption brought us to this new normal. We are living off of the high energy density that exists in these fossil fuels. It enables kind of superhuman stuff that hadn't been done before. Globalized trade networks. Well, yeah, Marco Polo and the various ship captains that sailed around the world, they did global trade, but not like today. Give me a break. Today, we are locked in on global just-in-time deliveries so that no inventory time is wasted, etc. I mean, we have really dialed in this globalization. And we even have energy-intensive industrial agriculture. That is, for the most part, what most of us are fed by. Very few of us are left growing our own food or being able to source it locally from someone you know, shopping at the farmer's market or being part of a garden, community garden. But no, what has happened is this globalized trading networks and this expansion of hierarchy in highly dense mega cities, that is what has taken control. Our superhuman capacity includes constant refrigeration where we need it. So what's the problem with the weather getting over 100? We got air conditioning. The global logistics themselves through the computer networks that we've created and the satellite communications and all the amazing superhuman capacity that we can plug more and more computers in, and then we can plug AI computers that are supercomputers to help make sense of what all of the others in total are doing. So we also have this unbelievable mobility. We have high velocity aviation, flying across oceans, flying across continents in a matter of hours and possibly in little more than a day. And we have mass consumption of what is shipped to us from all over the planet, whether it was made by humans or whether it was harvested by humans or whether it was extracted by humans. The modern world is not running on technology alone. It is running on ancient sunlight. Yes, I said ancient sunlight. Not like today's solar, where you get a day's worth of solar or you can get a day's worth of wind. This ancient sunlight was compressed and intensified in its density over millions of years, over tens of millions of years. And these fossils, having been created over such a long time, we are now burning millions of years of stored carbon in just a few short generations. And we're crying over the fact that we can't get it out of the Middle East, where somehow our oil happens to be, And we need it to keep the price of gasoline down, to keep driving our cars, because we don't really want to face what all of this is about. And we have an opportunity to see here how we might not be so dependent on these global systems, on this industrialization forever. Because in my generation alone, I watched this increase in ever more complexity, ever more energy needed. I learned this when I was 60, I think, and I'm closer to 80 now, but that all complexity requires energy. Most people can't extrapolate what that means, but as we build more and more hierarchical structures and have more and more expertise in more and more fields, that complexity has to be fueled by somebody for it to be useful, for it to be remembered and used and passed on. And when that source of energy that holds up that complexity has a short run, all sorts of chaos breaks out. We see what unraveling looks like. Yes, we do. Industrial civilization is a historical blip of fossil fuels when it's put on a time scale that is through eras or billions of years, millions of years, you know, lifespans that matter in the solar system and the stars. It's a very small blip. And we've only been on the upside of that blip for most of my life. And so now we're facing the downside of that flip, and we're not going to like it. We mistake temporary energy abundance for progress. How often have we heard the word progress be bandied about? Is, well, look at what we're doing. We're doing all of this incredible work in all of these fields, in all of the medicine, in all of the food production, in all of the saving of going extinct species. We talk about the wonders that this fossil fuel put to human ingenuity and building those systems that we so enjoy the fruits of and that we are actually very addicted to. That gets couched in the term of progress. Well, evolutionary speaking, it's not. It's near-term mass extinction. That's not progress from an evolution point of view. And that is really based on the physics study of what we're doing to the planet as this industrial civilization. Some people keep saying that's what humans are doing. And I keep wanting to remind people, no, it's not a fatal trait of our species. It's a fatal trait of our culture, of what has colonized the world, what has technologically advanced an industrial civilization such that we're all connected and we all think that this global progress is better. If we all could just get along, you know, then we could have our military not have to fight, and then we could continue this colonization state of bringing in resources that underlie all these goodies we want. Or let them be used in another country. Let them pollute the energy in China or in Russia or Vietnam. But bring us the goodies. Bring us the stuff. And we want to blame other people. No, I think it's time we face up to the fact that all of us listening, and I know some people don't like me using the word we, but I'm using the word we in a, what do you call it, in a in a royal way, not of royalty, not of billionaires, but in the royal we of the dominant paradigm, the people that live in it and consider that normal. You know, we have food traveling thousands of miles. That's not normal. We're commuting in it like a two-ton vehicle for one or two or three or four people, and we think it's progress when we give incentives to having more than one person in a car. How about we abandon that kind of mobility? What if we abandoned the mobility that aviation gives us? What if we were able to grow food without the fertilizer that gets synthesized from natural gas? That is also a problem in the Strait of Hormuz, because we're going to have farmers paying huge prices to put petroleum extract on our food supply. And we're going to get all crazy because the prices are going up. Yeah, but we've been paying too little for food and too much for rent for a long, long time. But we are victimized by it, so we definitely feel that we are victims and have to blame CEOs. I don't like blaming CEOs when I shop at the service or the store or the fuel pump that they're providing the supply to. That doesn't seem fair. And I'm part of our disposable consumerism, our culture where we now buy things not for a lifetime or handing down to the next generation, but, you know, making it into the next fashion season, maybe. We mistake fossil fuel abundance for what we call civilization itself. I'm pausing on this, and I'm going to say it again. We don't recognize, we mistake the fossil fuel abundance that we have had and continue to have for a little while as that is civilization. That is us as human beings peaking in our progress to be almost godlike, to be superhuman. We continue to assume that growth and high energy living is synonymous with progress. Progress in terms of what? A better job? Of more money to buy even more, to do even more damage to the biosphere and take from future generations? What is that about? So if you have some thoughts on that, please give us a call here, 707-755-9250. I know this is a heavy topic, and the case, the name, The Limits We Refuse to Face, I'm trying to break through that and ask us to let's face it. I may be putting out shocking statements that you kind of dismiss as lunatic or however, but let's discuss it. We're not facing the reality of what's about to happen.
Cows Thanks Stockham Construction, a union company with decades of experience in completing construction projects throughout Sonoma County. You can find out more by visiting StockhamConstruction.com. Stockham Construction proudly tunes in to the Roots of Rock every Sunday morning at 7 Pacific here on Cows.
Cows thanks Barrel Proof Lounge in Santa Rosa for their underwriting support. Located in the Brickyard Center at 501 Mendocino Avenue, they feature live music and comedy, as well as billiards, arcade games, karaoke, and more. Their website is barrelprooflounge.com, and they can be found on Facebook and Instagram.
Hey, Jeff, thank you so much. I'm going to put you in the air in just a minute. So this is Ecologic Talk Radio with Bernie Stephan, and I've picked on a pretty tough subject today, but I'm happy to say I have a caller on the line. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Jeff, can you? Ooh, I keep forgetting this. Now I put the fader up, Jeff. You can be heard.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, great.
Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm an avid listener of yours. Hopefully I represent many thousands who are out there who haven't chosen to call. But I like to call because you present very thoughtful discussions and ideas. And I would like to discuss this with you. Let's say I accept your diagnosis 100%. I'm not going to quibble with any of the science. I'm not going to quibble with any of the philosophy. I'm not going to quibble with anything. Let's just say I accept what you're saying 100%.
Great. I like that. I like hearing that.
Of course. Who wouldn't? So to me, you are like a doctor. Dr. Bernie has just diagnosed the Earth and civilization as having a very virulent, aggressive form of cancer that is destroying our ecology, our ecosphere, and our very civilization. We have cancer. Would you say that's a correct diagnosis?
Well, it is, but I might add that we actually know what to prescribe to cure this cancer.
Okay, what would
that makes
prescribe?
A difference, I think, okay. Rather than there is no hope. We don't know what to do.
Oh, I didn't say there wasn't any hope.
No, I know you didn't. I'm just saying that makes a difference in how I respond to you.
Okay, so you have woken us up to the fact that our civilization is on its last legs.
I hope so. I hope to do that, but I've been trying to do that for at least over a decade and been unsuccessful. So, but I'm like that ant who keeps bumping against that big dam.
Or Sisyphus, perhaps.
Okay, that's a better. I probably had mixed two metaphors anyway.
Okay, so let's accept your diagnosis. What is your hope? What is your prescription to cure this cancer? Something that we can actually do.
Yes, I was hoping you would ask that. And if you permit me, it takes a little bit of time for me to kind of go through the steps. But the first thing I say to people is stop doing what you're doing to try to save our current way of life. If you're working on improving this industrial civilization so that it's not so destructive, so it does less damage, so that it's fairer and it has a future. I say it has no future. Ultimately, what I'm asking people to do is not to do something to improve that, but to rethink, to let that go, to rethink about humans, how they have lived over the millennia, over the centuries. Indigenous people lived within the ecosphere as a whole with thousands of varieties, and we had great evolution. And so we've become incredible creatures because of how we had a base that was strong and we grew and grew and grew. And it wasn't really that we got into this mess, but maybe 300 years ago. And the truth is, we know how to live a low energy lifestyle. We know that if we let go of the global living and even let go of the nation, that sovereign nation, and if we let go of even that state of California, and if we even let go of the idea that there's a Sonoma County thing, but really got down to that tribal level of the neighborhood we live in, the village we live in, like the Pomo did, like the Coastal Miwok did. We came in and ran right over them because we thought they were ignorant, but they actually had a lot of indigenous knowledge that we are missing. We don't have it. So if we're going to do something, let's learn how to live more like indigenous people, or even of our culture, wherever we came from, lived 200 years ago before the Industrial Revolution and the modern global civilization swept us all up into something that we no longer have much control in. But we can drop out.
Okay. We can drop out. Is that the... salient point of...
Well, let me say, in anticipation of what you're probably going to next, is that my prescription, as you friend, is to stop thinking within this context of this industrial civilization. I cannot live outside of that context. I can think outside of it. And it, like over the last 15 or so years, I've been progressively thinking through that process in a way that now has me so separated from my family and almost everybody I talk to. But it's what I'm doing is wanting to alert us that I'm not an example here on the show to say, this is how to live. Other than it's got to be without all the intensive resources that our lives currently are filled with.
That may be.
Yeah,
Very well may be. But if there is no political will to do so, if there is no cultural will to do so, you are like the doctor who says, hey, man, sorry, you have cancer, you're going to die sooner or later from this. You're not going to live out a natural life. And there is no cure at this point.
Well, there is a cure at this point. Okay. We don't want to face it. That's what I'm arguing.
What I'm hearing from you, and maybe I'm getting it wrong, I certainly allow that possibility.
Let me interrupt one second here.
Sure.
You are speaking for most of the listeners, and I'm glad you're persisting on this point of view that what I am suggesting is impossible. And just allow me to interact with you on my belief that it is possible.
Okay. What are some practical things that you would tell me to do, or tell your next door neighbor to do, or tell your son or daughter to do that can help ameliorate the situation and cure the cancer?
Yes, thank you. That's a
Besides thinking about it in a different way. Many people think the way you do and recognize that we're in a heap of trouble here.
Yeah, they think similar to me, maybe, and I, with even the folks that pretend that we're all thinking the same way, aren't all thinking the same way. So the thinking part is a bit less concrete, I agree. And so one area that I have advised my actual grandchildren on is not only learn skills within the civilization, like how to use your iPhone productively, how to be on Facebook, how to order Uber, how to make a reservation and a trip, and all of that stuff. I don't want to emphasize those because they get emphasized into drive an electric car. They get emphasized into don't eat meat because of the methane and the water, etc., and the science. And they get to say all sorts of things that can't happen. But I say, let's learn the skills to live without electricity, to live without government, to live without airplanes or helicopters, transporting us to the hospital, to live without modern medicine,
okay,
to live less long. Let me finish. I think this is really important.
Well, time is of the essence.
It is. It is. But we are at my point at an essence. So if I may, I think we got to let go of the longevity of our modern medicine gives us. I think we've got to let go that 8 billion people will survive on this planet and that maybe only 1 billion is what can be supported. So it's a huge ask, huge, huge ask, but it's not impossible. Other cultures do it. So your turn. Sorry.
Okay. There may be, a huge, minuscule minority of people who, number one, have the privilege of doing what you say.
It's not a privilege.
Well,
it's a survival technique.
What do you say to the couple who have two or three kids, a mortgage, a job? They have to feed their kids. They may be renters. They don't even own the home. They don't have any land. They have 40% of Americans have less than $400 in liquid assets.
I would say
many of them are working two jobs for subsistence wages. What do you are you telling me seriously?
I am seriously telling
is to tell them, look, the world is collapsing. Learn how to grow a garden. Learn how to build a fire from twigs.
Learn how to let go. How to let go of things that you find are not working around you. The political system that is failing us. The economic system that is failing us. The modern medicine system that is failing us.
Letting go is one thing. You can let go of a lot of things.
And focus on your grandchildren.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
you said they were grandpeople, and that's what I am. And I continue to want to stay alive. That is a normal function of humans. But mentally, if I do go, I'm more prepared for dying now with what I'm believing I have to do in my last few years, and that is help the next generation, my grandchildren, more than me getting through the day. And if I don't get through the day, that's part of what happens. When you go from 8 billion to 1 people on the planet, there will be a lot of dying. And we got to get over the idea that death is such a horrible thing, we must avoid it at all costs. Death is part of living. And if there's going to be a future of humans living, then there has to be an immediacy of a lot of dying soon. I'm sorry I'm so blunt, but as you say, we are out of time, not only in this hour.
I have no problem with the concept of death. Of course, I'm getting up there in years too, and that's one thing that happens when we get older, is we accept death and its inevitability, which with a lot more grace usually and fatalism or acceptance than somebody who's 18.
Yes, and
that's
regardless
natural.
Of where you are in that age of dealing with what is coming our way, if you know that it's coming, you can prepare more.
Is a change in consciousness.
I agree, a change in consciousness and thinking about how we might live to survive.
Now, I think it goes beyond thinking.
Okay.
Because thinking is never enough. You know, those indigenous people have a consciousness of being connected to everything. They don't see themselves as separate.
Yes, I love that. And I agree that we need to learn that. I agree with you.
That is not something that can be learned. It has to be experienced.
Well, that's how we learn, is experience, yes.
Well, but what will give us that experience? It's not thinking, because if thinking could solve problems, No one would be neurotic. They wouldn't have to go to, you know, therapy would be 100% successful. It's like that Bob Newhart comedy where a woman comes to him and says, you know, I'm afraid of enclosed spaces or whatever it is. And he says, well, I'm a therapist. I can help you. It's only going to cost $5. Says, what, $5? Yeah, it's only going to take 5 minutes. And she says, well, okay, here's my $5. What's your advice? He says, don't do that.
Yes, yes.
You know, I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah.
Obviously, if thinking could get us out of our problems,
yes,
we would all be sage, enlightened people.
Well,
can I
interrupt so we can have a conversation on this? Because
I
believe that you have a path that makes sense. I'm not disputing that path. I equate the learning new skills, including how indigenous people survived without going extinct, as we are headed towards, so that when collapse happens, we see it around us, we don't panic, and we try to absorb and learn from of many people like you who can teach us what it is that we need to do. Now, you are already teaching us when you call on a program like this, and we've got to think to try to engage in more of the, escaping our reality in our brains and entering into a new paradigm that I believe you're talking about. I may use language that you're not comfortable with, but it's language that comes from my past. And what I call thinking is not different, in my opinion, than what you are talking about as a human being that goes beyond what your brain is spitting out.
Well, to me, thinking is different from feeling.
Okay.
I may get this wrong, but I believe that some indigenous person in the Amazonian rainforest is not thinking that they are a part of everything. They are feeling they are a part of everything.
No, I agree with that. But let me ask you this. I see young people coming from an indigenous heritage who wind up going to law school and wanting to help the rights within our system of their cultural remaining tribes and people. And they are definitely good at thinking, trying to restore the feeling that was once there in their culture that was taken away from them, that has survived in some ways. And we need to all tap into that feeling, because our bodies are more than one organ in the head.
Correct.
I mean, I agree with you that we are a full organism of which all parts of us contribute to how we act, how we go forward, whether we live or whether we die.
Well, we agree on that.
Okay.
So the question to me is, for instance, most people cannot think themselves out of depression because it's a feeling.
Yeah.
So
they take some drugs.
They wouldn't be depressed anymore. So there has to be something underlying all the changing thoughts that, you know, the hundreds of thousands of thoughts we have every day.
Yeah.
And underneath that, those changing thoughts is our feelings. So the question is, how do we affect our feeling at a very deep level? We can't do it by thinking about it. Because, again, a depressed person who feels depressed, who feels hopeless, who feels like laying in bed, no matter what they think, they're still going to have that feeling. Just as the indigenous people who actually become lawyers, if they were raised in that feeling of being part of everything, feeling doesn't wipe out thinking or the need for thinking. But feeling underlies thinking.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Jeff.
So how do we awaken the feeling, the direct experience of being a part of everything? And my solution, and it's becoming more and more evident through proven through scientific research, is not just some strange fringe idea. That is through mind-altering substances, either those created in a lab or natural ones.
Well, you know that there is law passing now to be more liberal with psychedelics and psilocybin.
Yes,
so I'm totally with you. I don't reject that at all. But
well,
part of our thinking should be that maybe we can have experiences that will move us to thinking regularly about that. I think you are a great advocate for something that is part of what we need going forward. And I don't like it when you say you're in opposition to thinking. I see it as connected. And I think that we all have feelings, we all think, and we all are affected by what we ingest. The water we ingest, the toxics we ingest, the foods we ingest, and the drugs that we ingest. But I would suggest that also that goes back to the indigenous peoples finding those plants that
Absolutely.
Did that for the peyote or and the smoking
Absolutely.
Of it or whatever.
The ayahuasca,
so
the peyote.
So it is nothing new, but if we are indeed facing a disruption that is totally freaking us out, and we're ready to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge, an alternative is what you're suggesting, and also, I believe, what I'm encouraging. And I don't see those things at odds at all, because it's not saying we want new legislation in Sacramento, we want new legislation in Washington. It says that our answers are not going to come top down. If we want to be thinking and feeling at being a part of this watershed, let's go out in that watershed. Let's understand where this water travels and through what. Let's hike through it. Let's take down the fences that say private property cannot get near the watershed that gives you your drinking water. Let's ignore all of that built world that has gotten us in this trouble. And if we don't think to recognize that we all got here because of fossil fuels are running out, and all of the institutions that we feel are in control are part of the what was created to deal with this complexity that got built up with a blip in history and that will be gone before we know it.
Well, I would like to just take issue with one thing. I'm not opposed to thinking whatsoever. I wish people would think more. But the solution will not come from thinking. It'll come from a change in consciousness, which is the basis for thinking. If we aren't conscious, we can't think.
Well, then I agree with you, because you keep coming back. I'm saying a new paradigm for thinking is a change in consciousness. I think those are different words for the same thing. Right now, I don't think our issue is simply fossil fuels. It's the issue of industrial scale itself, which causes us to think and to survive within that paradigm. And when that paradigm disappears, we are lost, because we've got zero skills in how to manage when that system has failed us.
This is true.
Yeah. Well, we agree amazingly, Jeff, and I'm so, so glad you called in. You're my favorite caller of all the callers we've had. Well, actually, come to think of it, you may be the only one, except there's some comedic ones we had. You will be happy to know that in 2 weeks, we're going to do a show that is much lighter than this. And it's going to involve the person that you know well and introduced me to. Her name is Cheryl King.
Oh, and awesome. person.
She's an amazing person who right now is teaching a class that Jeff and I are in that is for improv, but it's improv at a level I hadn't experienced before. So I'm really looking forward to being here on the show. But
I'm
she
so glad.
Also teaches in the area of being a comedian, a stand-up comic and theater. So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about how Cheryl has influenced you.
Well, I've had a handful of great teachers in my life, and I believe Cheryl is one of them. She creates a space to, first of all, we're all doing improv all the time. When we wake up in the morning, we don't know what the hell we're going to say to to most people that we meet. So we have to make it up as we go along. Most people have the idea that improv has to have something to do with comedy. And in Cheryl's classes, there can be comedic moments, but the goal isn't to make people laugh. It's to explore, it's almost like a spiritual dimension to me of being in the moment, relying on oneself, and being able to trust one's scene partner. So there's a real communal aspect to it, of trust, of agreement and creativity that comes out in very unexpected ways. So,
well, thank you so much for giving an introduction to our show in 2 weeks. And I'm hoping you'll be a listener, and I'm hoping that you'll be our regular caller. So,
well,
I'm still hoping that you inspire other people to call, which I'm sure you're doing. But they're not as brave as you are.
Yes, call. People, call.
Okay.
I
got to run because I got to close out the show. But thank you so much, Jeff.
Okay, Bernie. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. So I think, to sum it up, the real question should not be how to preserve industrial civilization forever, because that can't happen. The question is, what must we do in order to survive as a species? It'll involve soil and water, forests and fisheries, seeds and pollinators, local knowledge and physical community. The future will not be saved by preserving human-centered conveniences, but by preserving the living systems that support us. Collapse of industrial complexity is survivable. Collapse of the biosphere is not. The biosphere does not need industrial civilization. Industrial civilization does need the biosphere. So with that, let me thank all you listeners. Thank Jeff for calling in, and join us again in 2 weeks.